Hello and welcome back to The Latecomers. I'm Amity.
I'm Lemuel.
And we're struggling over here. We're going to talk about Purple Noon, a French film based on Patricia Highsmith's novel, The Talented Mr. Ripley. This movie came out in 1960. I really thought it was earlier than that. 1960, based on the 1955 novel. In 1999, there was an American version of this movie called The Talented Mr. Ripley, which is what the book is called. We were just trying to talk about the title of this movie, which has been translated from the French into Purple Noon, but is absolutely not Purple Noon in French. The direct translation of the title that was written on the screen is Full Sun.
Although I like the other title, Lust for Evil.
Lust for Evil.
Yes, that sounds very lustful and very evil.
So this movie, it's fun. I had a weird experience with this movie. So you brought this movie to us because you brought almost all of the movies from
the past to us. Yes.
So why did you want this on the list?
Well, because we had opened up our parameters to allow for foreign films. And so we've seen a lot of, well, comparatively more foreign films than we've been seeing lately, certainly. And I like this film because as much as I like The Talented Mr. Ripley, it's a different take on the same character.
Right. The Talented Mr. Ripley is not a remake of this film. It is another adaptation of the book.
Right.
If that makes sense.
And I like this particular take on Mr. Ripley because,
Matt Damon's
take on the character, which is sort of vulnerable and needy and desperately needs help and assistance and is scrambling to find his own identity. This is a person who is both a narcissist and a complete sociopath.
Oh, yeah. Maybe full-on psychopath. I feel like once you kill somebody, you've gone into psychopathy, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, and he is aiming for the same things that Damon is, only love and along with acceptance is not something he's looking at.
No, he loves himself so much.
Yes, he does.
Now, to be fair, the actor who plays him, pronounce his name for me.
Alain Delon? I'm not sure. Delon, I've heard it pronounced Delon.
This gentleman, R. Ripley, because his name is Tom Ripley in this movie as well, is so beautiful. He is one of the most beautiful actors I've ever seen. Like, the cheekbones in this movie. He is by far the most attractive person in this film.
And that's not denigrating the other actors in the film, no. I had shown this film to our roommate, Stephanie, years and years and years ago. And when she saw The Talented Mr. Ripley afterward, she was questioning, well, why wasn't Jude Law cast as Mr. Ripley? Because that would be closer in terms of this sort of beautiful, vain man.
Right.
But they were going for a completely different thing.
They were, In this case, Philippe is certainly not as attractive physically as Ripley is.
Or in any other way.
Well,
Philippe is a jerk.
Philippe is a fucking monster, but he's rich. And he has a fiance. These are the things that Ripley does not have. I had a weird experience during this entire movie because I was like, is it thrilling? While at the same time constantly being like, is he going to get away with it? Like every 3 minutes I was concerned that he wasn't going to get away. And I was like, oh yeah, this is thrilling. Well, I don't know why.
Puts me in the frame of mind as like a film that was released the same year, Psycho.
Yes.
In that you have a character.
The number one, according to the AFI.
You have a character who, through their behaviors, are completely unlikable.
Yeah.
And even hateable. But at the same time, you're
pulling for this dude.
Right. For some reason, because the people around him, as you pointed out, are so wretched. And near the end, you see him victimizing somebody who doesn't deserve it.
And then
it's like it switches in your brain. Oh, no, this guy's evil.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting choice, and that's where you kind of lose him, right?
Right.
Or he loses you, I guess.
At that moment when he starts, and we'll get into that, seducing his former friend's fiance.
Yeah.
That's when it turns and goes, okay, that's beyond the pale now.
So, we start with Tom and Philippe. They are friends, I guess. They're out in where are they? They're in Italy. They're in a town in Italy. This movie stars, or these characters are supposed to be American. They speak nothing but French, and they are in Italy the whole movie. So there you go. I knew that they were supposed to end up back in San Francisco, but I did not peg them as Americans. But apparently they're both supposed to be
They're
American.
Americans, and this it's odd how we can accept things in a film. For instance, we can watch a film about ancient Rome and everyone has an English accent and we just accept them as Romans.
I guess that's what it is. We're
Right.
watching it as an American audience because I'm just like, well, then why are they speaking
Right.
French? I mean, they're speaking French because it's a French film and these are French actors. Like,
Right.
right. And they never really say they're Americans. There's one dude, Freddie, who is an American and who is referred to as the American, but there are three Americans. A trick. So Ripley and Philippe are out. They're at a cafe. Philippe has all the money. Ripley wants the money. That's literally what the first conversation is about. It's about how Tom is broke and Philippe is not. And Tom ostensibly has been hired by Philippe's father to bring him back to San Francisco. Off after his gallivanting, and upon delivery, he will receive $5,000, which is a good amount of money in 1960,
Yes, it
especially
is.
apparently if you have $0 and also zero desire to do any sort of work at all. Although, when he puts his mind to a thing, he can be hardworking, but he's not. The first thing we see him doing is forging, just forger, just
For its
writing
own sake,
names
yeah.
on a piece of paper. And both of them in this first scene seem like bad people, but Philippe is like such an asshole.
Philippe is a man. The relationship that they had apparently at some point in the past, they went to school together and they were friends.
They're telling the story that they knew each other when they were kids, and that is why Tom had. Philippe's father always thought he was a good kid, and that's why he had thrown him this job. And I'm like, well, if he thinks you're a good kid, why doesn't he just hire you at his company? But whatever. But later, there's a conversation between Philippe and his fiance. Her name is Marge.
Les marges.
And he says, I don't know this dude. Like, he's making up our former relationship, and it is unclear to me whether that's true
It's
or not.
also, as we were discussing, very unclear whether or not he actually was sent to, because Ripley's character and Alain Delon, his portrayal of the character is so slippery that you're never quite sure how much of. And he begins to believe his own nonsense at one point.
At one point, he fully dissociates. But so they go to visit Marge, and then they all are going to get on a boat and go to. I don't remember where they're going to.
So they're in Montebello,
Yeah, and they're
and
going to a place that starts with a T. It doesn't matter. They're taking a boat to get there. The boat's called Marge, which is weird because it's not actually his boat, but it's Philippe's, quote unquote, Philippe's boat. And they're going to take this boat around, wherever the part of Italy is they have to go past, to go to this other town where they're meeting up with this American whose name is Freddie, who we meet in the first scene, and he's with two women who he tells to wait, and then they're like, no, and
He
then
doesn't
he
even
doesn't
remember their
catch them.
names,
He
too.
doesn't. It's
I
gross.
think that was a kind of a
We
funny
see
detail.
Tom and Philippe sort of accost a woman. They buy a blind man's cane off of him. Then they fake being blind to hit on a woman. And then she goes out with them and then finds out that they're not, he's not blind. And then is fucking cool with it.
Well, she narrowly avoids being in a threesome with these guys. She stops off because she wants to get something from a hotel and they take off having Philippe, it turns out, has just robbed her. The money came out of her purse.
Oh yeah, that's true. And
So,
there's a an earring that falls
right.
off that Ripley grabs.
And that's one of the interesting things about Ripley is that he's constantly scheming. He doesn't. I don't know that he knows at that point what he's going to use this earring for.
He doesn't have a
He
plan
just
for it.
knows that. And also and again, this is a really interesting performance that he just, at first you're going, God, they're both jerks. And then you realize that Ripley is just mirroring whatever Philippe is doing.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's a little bit similar to The Wages of Fear.
Right.
Is this a French thing?
Maybe it is.
I mean, obviously this comes from a book, so. So while they're on this boat with Marge, a bunch of things happen. Tom sets up a sort of, he plants the earring that we just talked about in Philippe's coat for Marge to find so that she thinks he's a philanderer because he fucking is, and sets up this fight. When that fight happens, Philippe takes the book that Marge has been writing.
She's writing a book on Fra Angelico.
Fra Angelico, which is I forgot that that was a person. I just know it as a liquor. Excuse me, a liqueur.
Liqueur.
Because it's fancy. And he grabs her book, all the pages that she's writing. She's handwriting this 1960s. Handwriting
this book. And he's oversized, legal pad, right? Or that size of page.
He picks up all these sheaves. He goes up onto the deck and he throws them into the water. And at that point, I was like, fuck this guy. He has literally zero respect for this woman.
Was this in response to... Did Ripley plant the earring in response to Philippe's practical joke about stranding him at sea?
I don't think so. I think that was, I don't know if it was before or after. And the other thing that happens on this boat is Philippe basically pushed, so there's a dinghy, a lifeboat, which is falling off of the ship. And so they push it all the, or off the boat, and they push it all the way off, and he wants to tow it. Philippe wants to tow it so it doesn't, ding up the paint on the boat, which is a wild thing to think
it's
about.
It's a beautiful boat. I can understand that. The lengths he goes to are ridiculous.
And then he ends up pushing Tom into the dinghy and then letting the rope out. So he's very far behind. And then as the boat is towing him, he decides to go into the, into the cabin underneath and have sex with his girlfriend, fiance. And then when he comes back up, it turns out that, oops, the tow line did not stay tied. And they have left the dinghy behind, and it has been hours. They go back and find him, and he is, so sunburned and the heat stroked. It's not good. And, Philippe did not intend that, right?
Philippe seems to be, he's an interesting character in himself, only in that I think that all of, and here we can introduce the evils of capitalism, which will be a running theme, because that's really
the
what this movie's about.
The evils of capitalism is that dude wants to be rich.
Right, but I mean, Philippe is, he doesn't seem to think about the consequences of anything that he does.
Because he's never had to face them.
So he will cheat on his girlfriend and then get furiously angry that she's bringing up that he's cheating on her.
Yep.
And he will...
Like I said, when he throws those pages off of the boat, I was just like, seriously, fuck this guy. He has literally no respect for this woman. None.
Yeah. The other scene, when he does keep Ripley on the boat, right? On the dinghy.
Yeah.
The fact that he does it and then thinks that just a quick apology is going to make up for the fact that this man's skin is peeling off.
Yeah.
And he's
Marsh
dehydrated.
Helps him. She's putting cream on him and whatever, and she's like, this is fucked up. This is also when she's like, you guys are going too far. Were you acting like this when you were 15? And that's when Philippe is like, I didn't know him when I was 15. I'm just going along with this
but
story
then
that
also
he's
knowing that Philippe is so self-obsessed and, right that you don't think that
who could say
he could very well not remember him, and he could have been his friend.
And once her stuff gets thrown over, Marge is like, take me to the fucking mainland. I'm getting off this goddamn boat.
Right.
And they do take her to the mainland, and she does get off the boat. And then they do go sailing again. Now, we should point out that when they went to pick Marge up, there is a pretty pivotal scene in the movie where Philippe and Marge are off talking, and Tom goes to change, and he's literally changing into Philippe's clothes because he doesn't have anything. So he grabs some shoes, he grabs a jacket, he puts a tie on, and then he pulls a full on Narcissus. Like, he basically starts, he gets right up, his face right up to the mirror, and he basically starts, you know, saying sweet nothings to himself.
No, he's just seen Philippe do this with Marge. Like, once again, Philippe has disappointed her.
Yeah.
She's angry, and he just sort of like does this weird kind of come on where he's really hyper aggressive, as you pointed out. You know,
he grabs her.
Right.
His hand on her arm, the like tension that he is holding her with, I was like, ooh, I don't like this.
And
I don't
so
like
when
this.
He leaves the room, it's at first almost as if he's trying to repeat them to capture the sound of his voice. But then he seems to genuinely be in love with his own reflection. And that image is one of the more popular images of this actor himself, because it kind of reflects what everyone felt about him, which is he's too beautiful to be in love with anybody. This is him.
Yeah. So once they drop Marge off, then it's just Philippe and Tom on the boat, and they're having a conversation on the deck. And it is a very weird conversation because it seems like they're joking with each other, but neither of them is actually joking. So but it starts with like Philippe, like, you can't even sign my name.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, well, I just practice. It just takes telling you. It just takes practice. And he's like, well, what would you do? And he's like, well, you know, I would take all your money. I would do all
to
this.
To be clear,
and the
he's
other.
Talking about killing him,
killing
and pretending
him and pretending
to
be him.
You know, Philippe.
Yeah. So, like, they're sort of jovial about it. And then Tom stays jovial and Philippe starts being like, the fuck is going on with this conversation?
Right.
Like,
because the thing is, he's also
a little too chill. When
he's underestimated him this whole time. He's like, this guy's a loser. He's hanging on to me all the time. And he starts involving him in these dumb schemes like
he
buying the
king. He also has said, hey, I'll give you $2,500 to just leave me the fuck alone.
And they play a game of cards for it.
Yeah. And Tom's like, I want way more money than that.
Philippe cheats so that he can get rid of Tom. And Tom's like, no, I saw you cheating. Which
the other way around. Tom cheats.
I thought Philippe was the one who dropped the card.
I thought it was Tom.
Okay.
Because he was, if he won, he would get the $2,500. And he didn't want to win because he doesn't want the $2,500. Whoever, I don't know, one of them cheats the other one. Because they start with a fucking full house, kings over tens. He drops a king, gets a 10. So he's still, now he has a full house, tens over kings. But he throws a 10 away, like, onto the deck. I'm like,
yeah,
right,
I think that
there
was great, but I mean,
okay, maybe. And then he's like, I have two pair. And then the other one's like, you cheated to lose. But they're having this conversation. And then in the middle of this conversation, Tom just stabs Philippe in the chest with looks like a Bowie knife.
Right. Something that they're using to cut ropes on the deck. And that's the other thing. It wasn't a well thought out plan for Mr. Ripley
this
because
motherfucker doesn't know how to
he has no idea
sail a boat.
How to operate a boat. He's constantly conking his head on the
he does it again
the masts. This scene is actually kind of
it's harrowing. It looks like that ship's gonna go.
And there is very
flip.
Little room to operate on this boat.
No,
he has a foot at the most.
I mean, it's a yacht, but it's like it's a small yacht.
Right,
it's,
exactly.
It is a beautiful boat, but
everything in this movie is beautiful.
he stabs Philippe. Philippe dies on on the deck. At which point, Tom is like, okay, he's got this look on his face like, oh shit, I did it. Like, I actually just did that, and now I have to like do something about this. He does get Philippe all wrapped up in a tarp.
Mm-hmm.
He ties an anchor to him, and then he tries to throw him overboard, but then he gets hit with the boom and they both go over, and Tom drags himself back up, and then we see Philippe wrapped in this it looks like a canvas tarp, like I said.
Or maybe a sail.
Sort of sink
like
down into the water. And then Tom goes, I can't remember where he's going. I think he goes to Rome next. He keeps going to places where Philippe is known. But he's calling himself Philippe. Like, he checks in under Philippe's name to a hotel. He We see him practicing the signature so
And
he
that's
can
an
get his signature
interesting,
down.
compelling scene to me. It's very quiet.
Yeah, the first thing we see him do is he buys something from a camera store, and then we see that it is a projector to project a picture of Philippe's signature up on the wall. So he starts doing it like huge, like 2 feet high. And then I was like, that seems like a bad way to go about this, but it seemed to have worked for him because he did, in fact, get the signature down. Also, Philippe's signature is ridiculous. It starts with like a flourish across the whole, like just across the page.
It's sandwiched between a flourish on top and a flourish
At the
underneath,
bottom, and then there's a flourish in the middle too. It's bonkers. But Philippe Greenleaf is a pretty name right now. Also, you're not supposed to just write your name in cursive. Like that's not. Anyways, it's fine.
Cursive,
He
ladies
gets
and
the
gentlemen.
signature
It's
down,
something we don't have to worry about anymore in the
which is
world.
wild. People are like talking. I'm seeing a lot of discourse about cursive and like, society's gonna die if we don't learn teach cursive. And I'm like, we should teach cursive, but not necessarily to write it, to read it. Because not everything's gonna stay digital forever. And there are original documents. Even if you scan it and upload it, it is in written in cursive. Like you should be able to, it's like I feel like some kids are gonna look at it like it's Cyrillic. Like they're just gonna be like, I don't know what
And
this
I
is.
think that that's probably the next generation is going to suffer from that problem.
Yeah. So I think cursive is important. I don't think everybody needs to learn how to write in cursive, but what I do think is more time does need to be spent on handwriting because now everybody is doing tablets and Chromebooks and stuff. This is like old lady things, but also I think being able to write your own name and like write legibly is important. Like I just do, coming from a person who has to decipher handwriting every day. Just like y'all, like I want to get them those notebooks with the big fat lines and the dashes in the middle, like a
Oh,
road, and
yes.
then have them
I
practice their
mean,
letters.
my cursive was never very good because I couldn't draw the relationship between letters like
I don't even
Q
care about cursive,
and, but like
just
Q and
regular
G
handwriting. Yeah, Q
are
and G,
so
yeah.
different from actual
What they are
print
in the,
writing. So, but
yeah.
I will add that my print handwriting is absolutely beautiful.
Yes, your handwriting is very, it's very small.
Yes.
I also have very good handwriting. I can't, I will also print in cur, I can do print or cursive. But yeah, people are like, why is your handwriting so good? And I'm like, because I'm the one who has to read it later. I'm trying to make my life easier. So we've got a dead Philippe. Oh, that's the other. Once he gets the signature down, he gets pictures taken and he has Philippe's passport and he redoes it. Like he takes a like a piece of putty and he takes an imprint of the stamp and then he puts the stamp on his own photo, takes off Philippe's photo and adds his, or he just puts his on top. It's hard to tell. Passports were very lo much lower, like e way easier to forge at that point. And then signs his name behind the new picture. So now he has a real passport with a fake photo showing him as Philippe Greenleaf. So now he's going to use that. He starts pulling money out, not a lot, but some. He's got hotels under his name. At one point, I don't know. There's a woman who runs a dance studio where Marge lives. It's not her mom, but it is somebody who knows her intimately. She goes into a hotel when the people at the hotel are calling out for Philippe Greenleaf because he has a phone call. And they're like, oh, he's here. I gotta tell Marge that he's here. And he just like he's walking into the room, he sees them and he just turns around and walks the fuck back out. And then he goes to another hotel because he's like, well, they
Right,
think
he's
I'm
keeping
here
it
now.
going. He wants to sell that boat
Yeah.
because there's a tremendous amount of money to be had in it.
Well, because he is owed It turns out he owes 500,000 lira on the boat still. So he'd rather sell it back than have to pay for the rest of it. Yeah, he talks to Marsh and says Philippe's gone to Rome. He's not coming back and he doesn't really want to see you. He's got the passport. He is staying at a small hotel with a woman. Like it's almost like a boarding house because he's there for a little while, and then Freddie comes upon him, thinks that it's Philippe because
He's wearing Philippe's
he's
clothes.
wearing Philippe's clothes, and he asks the woman, "Is Philippe up there?" And Tom's up there, and he's talked to Tom. He knows Tom is up there. He goes up to Philippe's room and really is a sort of so comfortable just looking around at all the shit that's in that room. We should say Tom also has Philippe's typewriter, which apparently is like his baby, and he's written Marge a letter on it. Typed a letter and then signed it with Philippe's name. And she later says it's so flat, it's like a dead man wrote it or something like that. And I'm like, that's because this man
And when he
doesn't
says that, or when she says
speak.
that, there's a tiny little smirk on his
Smirk on his
face,
face, yeah.
which was an interesting detail. And that's also why I'm beginning to, I think that there's a point where he tipped over, like he was a
Yeah.
sociopath, and then he starts to enjoy,
Yeah.
like, how long can I get away with
How,
this?
yes, that's what it is. And how much can I do? So Freddie goes back down. Like Tom says, I'm just visiting. He's out to lunch. He went someplace on, Rue de whatever, and he's like, okay, well, I'll go check on him. And then the woman at the door says something, and it makes Freddie go, oh, okay, well, is Philippe here? And she's like, yeah. And she's like, yeah, he's right up there. And then he knows, okay, well, Tom is fucking pretending to be something. And Tom hears this because he's out on the landing. And so Freddie's like, oh, I'll just take this letter back up to him because she has brought a letter or a message. And Freddie goes back upstairs, walks into the room, and Tom hits him with a big jade Buddha. And kills him in the back of the head, hits him in the back of the head with a Buddha, to which I said, Buddha is not a weapon. And then he has to dispose of that body. But first, he has to eat a whole ass meal. He roasts a chicken, he eats some tomatoes, and he's just walking around this dead body. Now, largely because he can't take him out in the daytime. He's got to wait till night. But he's just very chill about.
It's interesting watching this performance in, for this reason as well. He panics both when he murders Philippe and right before he murders
Ready.
Freddy.
Yeah.
Afterwards, though, the second time, he seems to be much more calm, like he's just adjusting to the new circumstances. And then comes the scene where he has to walk with Freddy, pretending that he's drunk down the staircase.
Yeah.
Freddy's a heftier
He's a big,
individual.
there's no way this dude's carrying this guy
Oh, and he doesn't. He sort of like half
floors
drags
down.
him. He has him like
I don't even think he could have done that.
he does it in a way that is bordering on French farce.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's
100%. At one point, he hears somebody coming, and so he lights a cigarette and then puts it in Freddie's mouth,
his
and
dead
they
mouth.
like lean against each other like they're both drunk. At one point, when he's trying to get him in his car, because he has gone down, moved Freddie's car over closer to the hotel so that he doesn't have to go so far. He's like holding him up against the car, and somebody's walking
Some
by.
priests, a pair of
That's
priests.
right, priests, because there's a bunch of priests everywhere in this movie. He's like, come on, help me out a little buddy. Like that's what he says. And, like he's got a drunk guy and is trying to help him into the car. He gets him in the car. They drive to a place and he chucks him over into what I presume is water. And then he drives the car somewhere. We don't know where. And then at that point, Freddy's body is found fairly quickly, and they want to
Well, he
go.
also has the line where Philippe did it.
Well, that's the thing. So, I think that's right after he finds out that Freddy's body has been found, and so he needs to figure out how he's gonna deal with this. And yeah, he's putting everything together. He's like packing up, and then he's just like, "Well, Philippe did it. I didn't do anything. Philippe Greenleaf is the murderer." And then he just goes on
Right,
one
he
of.
escapes. He makes a narrow escape out of the top of
He goes.
a.
He climbs off up on the roof a
Right.
bunch of times. Yeah, and then
Parkour.
yeah, because he sees the cops coming up to talk to Philippe, so he jumps out the window. His two of his suitcases are down by the entrance, and then he had two more upstairs that he was getting. So he jumps out, comes down whatever, fire escapes or whatever to get down, grabs a cab, and then says, I have two more bags up at the
And
door. I need you to
so the
go get and
driver
put in
goes
the
and gets
trunk.
them.
So he goes and gets them, and then Tom is on the way. And what he does is he goes, he buys. I'm trying to think. He goes to the train station. He uses Philippe's information to cash. Basically, I think he's cashing basically like traveler's checks. He takes a or maybe it's a full bank, but it's in the train station, and he takes out 150,000 lira or something like that. It's
A huge
a
amount.
lot of money, and they look at his ID and they are okay with it. And then he go, the guy goes and talks to his manager, and then he comes back and he's like, "You only have $495 left in the bank," and he's like, "I know," or in your account, he's like, "I know," and then he just pulled out this money, and apparently Italian money in the 60s was.
It's the size of like a
It's
trade paperback
paper,
novel. It's
bigger than
huge.
that even. It's like a full 8.5 by 11, maybe 9 by 6. Like it's these big pieces of paper. They're all bound together in stacks, right? So he takes all of those, and then he does he buy a ticket to Rome? He buys a ticket or something, and then he also like, and then he packs everything up. And acts very much like he just got off the train as himself. Now
As
he's
Ripley,
Tom again. He's
because now
Tom
that
Ripley again.
Philippe is is
He's
investigated
in
by the
trouble,
police.
right? So he takes the money out, and that's basically the last thing he does as Philippe. Now he's Tom. He's come into town.
Well, no, he writes us his letter. That's the last thing he does is Philippe.
Oh well, yeah. That's later, though. He does all this first, and he is tracked down by a cop. Who is like, how do you know him? Do you know where he went? He's like, no, I don't know him. There's no way he could have killed Freddy. I met Freddy once, and he seemed like a good guy. Whatever it is, he's like, I've been out of town. I've been traveling. I haven't seen him in a while. I just got into town this morning, which he came from the train station, and I believe he has a ticket that shows that he's new in town, even though he obviously has been there for a while. So he goes through all that hullabaloo with the cop, and the cop is like, okay, don't leave. Don't leave town. There is a literally a line that's like, you gotta stay here. And so he's like, fine. He's also told, you've gotta come down and ID Freddy, which is wild. Because I'm like he says that Marge and her family knew him way better, and that they're and then is told that they're coming.
I think the cop is trying to shake something loose because he thinks
Yeah.
that something's.
And then he's like, they'll be here tomorrow. I'm gonna need you to come down to the morgue tomorrow to ID him. And I'm like, okay. So he goes to the morgue. There's like a dozen people there. He is the one that IDs them him
Including
for,
the dance instructor and Marge.
yeah, and Marge. It's like all the people we've seen other than the two that we know are dead. And at that point, they go to, I think, a lunch, like a almost like a wake. And Tom leans over to Marge and is like, Philippe is, I know where he is. He went to, I think that's when he says he went to Rome. I don't remember where they are, or back to the city that they were in at the beginning. And I just didn't want to tell the police, but I'm a little bit worried and this, that, and the other. And sitting right behind them, and I don't know if he knew, is an undercover cop, is a woman who's like clearly listening. It was funny because as soon as the frame was set up, this woman's face is just in front. And I was like, well, she's going to be important, right? Because that's a lot of her face on the screen for somebody we've never seen before. And it is unclear to me why Tom knows that that's a cop, or if he's just lucky
I
again.
don't know if he's lucky as much as he's suspicious of everybody at
Of
this
it,
point.
maybe. I just feel like, because we were talking, you were like, he makes his own luck. I'm like, he doesn't. He is literally tripping into all of
I think
these
that he
things.
stumbles into situations and he takes advantage of them, but he's a really good. He's
Yes.
an opportunist, and he takes advantage of every tiny little situation.
He gathers a lot of stuff like a magpie, and then finds ways to use it later. He's like the ultimate hoarder. Like, I might need this later. But he doesn't. There's nothing premeditated really in what he ends up doing. Like,
No,
I
probably
think
not.
even when he
The
kills
most,
Philippe, I think he was like, this is a thought experiment. And then he was like, you know what? Fuck it. And then he
right.
just kills him. Which, to be fair, if I had to spend that much time with Philippe, I might stab him. He was a dick.
But starting with like seeing that earring, you can just see
Yeah.
the mental
Where,
calculation.
like, this could
I'm
come
gonna
in
take this,
handy.
it's
This
gonna
could
come,
come in
right,
handy later.
exactly.
Yeah. But not like I'm gonna
I don't think he
tell.
had
No,
any
he had no idea. He just,
idea that he was gonna do that at that
like I said,
point.
like a magpie, he's just picking up things that he might be able to use in his nest later and then finds places to use them. So after he says all of that, I think the cop, no, and that's when he seduces Marge. And here's the thing about Marge. There's clearly something, I don't want to say something wrong with her. She is not able to have healthy relationships. I don't know what her relationship with her father was, but I don't think it was good because Philippe treated her like shit and she kept coming back and kept, and then when he wasn't like reaching back out to her after she stormed off and left him, she's like heartbroken that he's not, talking to her, not reaching out to her, other than this letter that is like, she's like, why would you type a letter to me and then sign your name? Like, that doesn't make any sense because it wasn't him. That's why. But she like is pining for this dude who literally every time we saw them together, he was either love bombing her or abusing her. I mean, it was not a healthy relationship. And then right into sleeping with Tom because Tom fucking is like, ooh, victim. Like, this is gonna be easy pickings, which is very upsetting and sad. And she doesn't deserve that. And that's when you're like, fuck this
Right.
guy.
That's why I know that I think it's the scene before this where he actually writes Philippe's suicide letter.
Is it before that? I thought
Or
it was he.
because she's depressed because she thinks Philippe has committed suicide.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay.
And
So it was. So
he went
yeah,
to the trouble of typing a
he
letter.
types a letter and it's like a terrible letter. It's literally like, I have decided to end my life. All of my money should go to Marge because I love her. And then he signs it. That's like it. I mean, it's the worst fake suicide letter I've ever seen. And then he takes all of that money that he got
Almost
out,
all of
almost
it,
all of
right.
it, and stacks it up in the room next to his typewriter and this letter. And yeah, and then leaves. And then, yeah, the presumption is that it was Philippe. And the reason that the presumption was that it was Philippe is because the fingerprints in that room and the fingerprints on Freddy were the same. Were
Which
the
again is
same.
an example of the dumb
Yeah,
luck thing that you're
yes,
talking about.
exactly. So, yeah, they're the same because they're both Ripley's, but they aren't, they can't. He's presumably gone. I don't know where they think he, how they think he killed himself.
Yeah, there's
There's no
the
body here, so yeah, it's interesting. And then, yes, and then he goes to Marge and he seduces her, and it's real gross. And then they are like chilling on the, like on a
Yeah,
beach,
they
like
go to
or
the
on like
beach.
a pool at a hotel or
He's trying
something.
to avoid
And then she's like, oh, Philippe's father is here because, like I said, Philippe left all of his money, not just the cash that he had, but any money that was his to her. And he was coming to say, you know, I want you to have some, like, I'm not going to contest this because, but she's like, oh, well, when he finds out you're here, he's going to want to see you. And he's like, and Ripley's like, I don't, I'm good. I'm going to stay down here. Don't worry about it. And I'm like, yeah, because I don't know if this dude even knows who you are.
No, no way of telling.
It doesn't seem like he does. And so he's just kicking it there. And he's, the like the proprietrix comes out and she's like, can I bring you a drink? And he's like, yes, bring me your best. Like she literally says, can I bring you a drink? And he says, bring me your best. What does that mean?
The most expensive, maybe.
Like I'm literally like, if somebody asked me, and they had a full bar and a full situation, can I bring you a drink? And I said, bring me your best. What am I expecting to get back? Am I gonna get a fruity drink? Am I gonna get a Coke? Am I gonna get a fucking $75 shot? A $750 shot? Like, what am I gonna get? But when he says the best, then he starts mumbling to himself, murmuring to himself, the best, the best, the best, the best you've got, the best. And then meanwhile, we are seeing the boat, which is now being sold. Or returned, and they're gonna get the money back. And I
It's in
believe
dry dock,
Philippe's parents
or
or dad's there
put it in a dry
to
dock.
sort of deal with it. And Marge is there as well. And yeah, they're pulling it up out of the water. This is why you don't take a boat out of water. You're not supposed to see the bottom of a boat. It means something has gone to terribly wrong. But they're bringing it up, bringing it up. And oh no, what is caught in the propeller? Philippe's body is what is, well, the rope that was attached to the anchor that was attached to the to Philippe's body. And so as they're like pulling this boat out of the water, dragging up behind him is the package of Philippe, and we see his hand coming out, and then Marge starts screaming, and
And Marge
then
will never be the same,
she,
poor
no,
thing.
well, to be fair, she was already broken. Maybe this will get her the help she needs. I don't know. And then as Tom is chilling at the pool or whatever, drinking a tiny shot of who knows what, the best, the cop comes back, the guy that was like, well, I don't trust this motherfucker. And he tells the proprietor, he's so dumb too, tell him to come in, call him inside. And she's like, why? Like, why would I do that? What should I ask him? What do I, and I'm just like, she's terrible at this. He goes, just tell him that he's got a phone call. But it, what phone call? Just like, ma'am,
Subterfuge is not
not
something that
her
she's
thing.
familiar with.
No. And then she does. She says, Mr. Ripley, you've got a phone call. And like smugly, he gets up and walks into the, or walks out of frame. And we are seeing facing the beach what he was seeing. And then that's it. We don't hear anything. We don't see anything except in the best French style, fiend come up the screen, which is how every movie should end. And that's it. We presume that he has been, he is being arrested and will be
Which is
tried for his
different
crimes.
from, excuse me, it's different from the book.
Right, because you had said, so this whole time I'm like, wait, how's this going to end? How's this going to end? Because you had said he's in what, five books? And this is the first one, presumably, because it's called The Talented Mr. Ripley. I'm pretty sure that's how you start a series, not end a series. Plus, and obviously this is an adaptation. This does feel like his first and second murder. It doesn't feel like he's murdered before, because every time he does it, he seems surprised that it has happened. Like it's one of those things where you fantasize about doing a thing, but it's never a thing that you ever would do. And then you do it and you're like, oh, I did it. Well, now what do I do? Because a thing has happened that I can't take back.
Yeah, the end of the story, the novel, is that he gets away with it. And
But he doesn't involve himself with Marsh,
he doesn't
right?
involve himself with the Marge. He just winds up a very wealthy individual who, at the very end of it, is concerned about the his increasing paranoia that the police are going to find him at some
Mm.
point.
And he's still going, under the other
No,
name,
he's he's Tom
Philippe
Ripley.
is found and then he goes
Yeah.
back to Ripley.
So
Okay.
he winds up there's a few other films based on his exploits.
Wait.
So there's a film in 1977 called The American Friend. It's based on Ripley's Game. Dennis Hopper is Ripley.
Oh, interesting.
And that was remade a second time as Ripley's Game with John Malkovich playing Ripley.
Interesting. That I
And
like.
Doug Ray Scott playing his victim, essentially, somebody that he manipulates into all sorts of horrors, frankly. And I remember seeing that film with Malkovich, who isn't as pretty as Ripley needs to be, I
Yeah.
suppose. But at the very end of it, he does capture that sort of quality of not. There's a moment at the very end of that film where he's with his wife, and it's like he's considering for just a moment, did I do something wrong? No, I guess not. And he goes on the rest of the story, or rather through the end of the story, just kind of not making decisions that affect everyone else, but not getting directly have any sort of fits of conscience about what he's done.
Right. I one thing I will say about the fact that this role was played by this actor, as I said, he's one of the most beautiful men I've ever seen in my life. And the fact that like Freddie thinks of him as a mooch and like a nothing and like he shouldn't be there. Philip also treats him like garbage. I mean, he's paying his bills and whatever, but he's not. He has no respect for him. And I'm just like, here's the thing though. That dude has pretty privilege. That dude would get stuff because of the way that
I
he
think that in
looks.
this case, there's an element of him thinking to himself that he deserves more.
And because I'm telling you, as a white dude that looks like that, if he carries himself like he should get things, he will get things because our society sucks. And the fact, so that was a little, it was a little bit like, oh, you haven't seen Barbie, but there's a call out in Barbie where she's like says she's ugly or whatever, and they're the voiceover person who is, I believe, Helen Mirren, who you only hear at the beginning, and then this part right here is, which is like, this is when it's a problem that the filmmakers have hired Margot Robbie to play this part. It's that kind of thing. So yeah, so they're talking when they're talking on the boat when they're going over his plot that wasn't a plot until it was. Philippe is like, "That's why you took my bank statements. So you kill me and you're rich." And Ripley's like, "You don't miss a trick, do you?" And Philippe goes, "Seems awfully complicated. You'd be caught immediately." And then Ripley says, "Not necessarily. I might not look it, but I've got lots of imagination." And at that point, I think it's right then where he just stabs him in the fucking chest with a big ass knife. And then, yeah, immediately is like, I can't believe I did that. Yeah, no, like I said, we were watching and I was like, is this a thriller? At the same time, I was so tense, wondering if he was going to get caught. And he's about to get caught for 60% of this movie. Like, as soon as he. I think it might be as soon as we hear, for me, as soon as we hear Philippe tell Marge, I don't know this dude, I'm just going along with this story, I'm like,
Right, because
oh
Philippe is a bored young man with a great deal of money, and so he keeps doing things to amuse himself. And he has no scruples about amusing himself, whether it's
no.
paying someone 20,000 lira so he can buy his cane, this
Yeah.
blind man,
So
or,
gross. The blind man's like, what am I gonna do? I'm actually blind. How am I gonna get home? And they're like, well, buy a cab. I'll give you extra money for the cab. I'm just like,
Well,
what the fuck?
the woman that they meet, the two of them,
Yeah.
and
And Philippe is pretending to be blind and just gropes her just blatantly, constantly.
so she winds up exiting not because she's necessarily horrified. She thinks this is a great joke. She might be partly drunk, mostly drunk,
I believe she is drunk.
and then she le and they immediately take off, and Philippe has stolen her money.
Yeah, that's
We
right.
know that he has a ridiculous sum of money.
Yes.
Why he needs to steal hers makes no
It's
sense at
just
all. It's
because, yeah.
because, again, he's playing these sort of games to amuse himself.
Yeah.
And then when he realizes that Ripley might be entirely serious about killing him and taking
It's
over.
literally them both coming to the knowledge in that conversation where, oh, neither of us is fucking kidding.
Right. Well,
Like,
because
we thought we were having a laugh, and
right.
neither of
But
us
Leap's
is
thing is
actually
that
having a
he
laugh.
never has any consequences,
No,
especially
never
with
has,
Marge.
only will once.
He can do anything he likes to Marge,
Yeah,
and
it's gross and
she keeps
terrible.
accepting him. And she is so broken from whatever, for whatever
Whatever
reason,
happened to her, whatever's,
that she
yeah.
just keeps accepting him back. And that's his privilege. And so Ripley is this weird kind of, and I like, as I said before, I like this portrayal a little bit better than the Matt Damon portrayal, because although that guy, you feel for him because he just keeps stumbling along and is trying so hard to fit in. This is a person who I wouldn't see him coming because he is good looking
Yeah,
and
there is
he
that.
has all sorts of elements that make it seem like he should have everything going for him, his personality and his character, when it's really he's just reflecting whatever you're giving him.
Yeah, which I mean, right off the bat, the first thing we see them, you know, he's practicing just signing somebody else's other people's names. I don't know who it is. And then Philippe goes, "Do you do any what do you do? I mean, other than this?" And Ripley goes, "Nothing." And he goes, "Well," he says something about like, "How could that be?" Or isn't that, you know? So he says something disparaging to him, and Ripley's like, "Well, you don't do anything." And he said, "Yeah, but I've got dough. Like, I'm independently wealthy. You're not. So how are you getting away with doing literally nothing?" And then there's like a line that's like, "Why have your own money when you could spend other people's?" Because that's what he's doing, right? Even when he is asked to pay for something, like, he whines like a bitch about how he's broke and how everything is ruined now, and how, like, if you don't come back to San Francisco with me, then I'm sunk. And he gets in like this real pouty baby situation. And then, yeah, he does stab a man in the chest. So there's a little, he contains multitudes, I suppose, but also only one. And that one is him, and he loves him.
He does. It's a romance in many ways.
It's really good. Like I said, I was tense during the watching of this movie and not even realizing it. Like I said, I didn't even
It's
realize
a
it.
really, it's Rene Clément, the director, did not direct many thrillers. He did a couple of others. I didn't realize that he did a film that I later on, or I recently discovered, was one of his that I'd liked actually for a long time. It's a very sort of disturbing film called Rider on the Rain with Charles Bronson.
Writer or writer?
Rider on the
Okay.
Rain. And that one is sort of dist it's even more disturbing than this film, because it begins with a woman left alone in her home. She has a boyfriend, or a husband rather in his case, who's unfaithful. She's left alone. She's sexually assaulted by a stranger.
I was gonna say the Charles Bronson film, so somebody gets raped and then he has
Well,
to
no,
do
she
a
kills him. She
oh.
kills her rapist. She tries to hide the body. And then Charles Bronson shows up as a man who just seems to know an inordinate amount about both the man that was killed and the fact that she killed him. And she's trying to, and you don't know who he is until the very end. And you find out that he's actually with the military police, and this was an escaped psychopath. But at the same time, in her dealings, her kind of attempts to cover up the body, she runs afoul of the criminal underground in France, and it
Oh,
just keeps
fuck.
going wide. And
I
it's
know.
a interesting film
She's
because
just trying to live her life.
it starts with a quote from Alice in Wonderland about falling down this hole that just keeps getting deeper and deeper
And
as you
deeper,
fall
and yeah, it
down,
never
and that's really
stops.
reflected in the film. And it's a weird, moody kind of movie, and one of the films also where Charles Bronson is able to give a performance as opposed to sort of being Charles Bronson.
Right.
But yeah, he did a couple of films that I was really that I it turns out, oh, like he did that one too. But mostly, he does a lot of dramas and some period pieces. This is not his cup of tea, really, at all.
No, but he was, I don't know that they call it a journeyman, but they're in the Criterion, you know, notes, because we watch the Criterion version of this, which is not on Max. We had to rent it. They do talk about how he was like sort of a wide-reaching director.
Right, like Robert Wise.
Yeah, right. Which we don't want to say journeyman because that's has a weird
That almost
connotation,
denigrates the amount of talent that's
but
obviously
it's right.
here,
Like
right?
it's I think a journeyman director is a skilled person who just
Mm-hmm.
isn't auteur, whatever the
Right.
fuck that means. Well, we know what it means. Probably an asshole and probably definitely a white dude. And the other thing or that we were discussing when we were watching it was the look of it. I mean, it's beautiful, right? And we were talking about how it pulls a lot from French New Wave, which is a genre I do not enjoy in any way. We watched one French New Wave film and I was like, I'd rather die than watch another one. I hate this. I kind of do want to watch that Kristen Stewart movie about what's her name? What's her name? Jean Seberg.
Yes.
What did we watch? I can't remember the name.
Breathless.
Breathless, that's right. We watched Breathless. Stars Jean Seberg. I was bored to the point of irritation, I think is how I felt about it. And I was like, these are not people. I'm watching mannequins do things. Like it was, I just didn't enjoy it. I understand that that's like it's like a thing that people like, but I am not one of those people, and I just can
Jean
not.
Seberg is very wooden in that performance, and she was directed as such. And she is an amazing actress. She did a film called Lilith, where she plays a mentally ill young woman that Warren Beatty falls in love with.
I mean, you tell me she's an amazing actress. I've seen one role and it was not
Yeah,
good.
it's amazing to think that this is the same actress. That's kind
Well,
of like, well,
and I
oh,
just can't give her a second
right.
chance. But at the same time, Kristen Stewart played her in a film and I'm like, well, that makes sense because
Right.
I've seen Kristen Stewart first be not wooden and then be wooden on purpose. And I'm like, okay, so that's a thing. But when you start at that level, you're just like, nah, fuck this. I don't want to watch this person. Yeah, Breathless really left a bad taste in my mouth, and I don't know that any French New Wave film is gonna like win me over after that was my entrance. But visually, we do like some of the cuts and some of and things like that, which were apparent here, but tonally, character-wise, very, very different, obviously. But yeah, no, it was really good.
Good, I'm glad you liked
I'm
it.
glad
It's
I
like
watched
a,
it.
it's it has the elements of a heist film
Yeah,
in many
it
ways.
does. That is what it felt
But
like to
you're
me.
also watching this guy running along a tightrope and wondering, is he gonna fall now? Is
Because
he gonna fall
it's
now?
a getaway movie, which is half or more of a heist film sometimes. So yeah, it's definitely
Okay,
right up my
good.
alley. You also like forgery and things like that, and that's why I'm like, you
Well,
should watch
little
the
details like that interest me. I was watching, I saw The American with
That the George Clooney movie?
George Clooney.
Yeah.
And
A lot of
between,
putting together a gun. Like
right, putting
that's
together a gun,
a
he's filing down the barreling for the gun, he's doing all this other stuff and making these very meticulous plans. And that kind of thing is interesting to me. If it's involving enough, you're right there with the character trying to figure out what they're going to do.
So I am glad we watched this movie. I really liked it, and I do think it was very thrilling. I understand why it wasn't on the AFI list because it wasn't the A part.
No.
And
It
yes,
was they were pretending to be American.
a capitalism is
Very
one
much.
of the villains in
Well,
this
here,
movie.
for you, it'd be capitalism. For me, from my background, is the fact that envy is a deadly
It
sin,
is a deadly sin.
and it's all
I don't even know if
inspired
he's
by it.
I don't know if he's envious.
He really wants
He
to,
is,
he wants everything that Philip has, Philippe has,
yes, and is
including Marge.
mad about it. Like, not even like, it's almost like, I guess I see envy as a softer thing than it really is. Like covetousness and envy feel different to me, and this dude was covetous. Like, in the point of, I'm taking your shit. Because I don't give a fuck about you and I deserve it. Envy feels to me like, oh, why can't I have it too? Not necessarily, I want exactly what you have, just like a congruent thing to what you have. Whereas covetousness to me is what he had, which is I'm taking your stuff.
Qualifies as a deadly sin of the, well, deadly sins qualify as deadly sins because they lead to other sins.
Right.
But a good description of it, an insatiable desire.
Right, okay.
And it can be described as a sad or resentful covetousness.
Okay.
Towards the traits or possessions of someone else.
Okay, so it is.
Right.
It is a level above. Right. I think of it as sort of the entryway, but it's the whole
right. But mountain. That's also they believe that the reason why it's classified that way. It's an entryway into even worse stuff,
like stabbing a dude in the chest.
Stabbing him in the chest, and taking advantage of his girlfriend, killing some guy with a Buddha.
here's a weird question. Not a weird question. Here's a question that I don't know if you know the answer to, and if not, we can just cut this out. Who came up with the deadly sins? That's not in the Bible.
No, no. It's gathered from the Bible, but it's not a specific biblical teaching.
So is it like similar to
Pope Gregory in 590?
Okay, it is like it is the earth is 6,000 years old. There's nothing in the Bible that says that. No, somebody just did some creative math.
But yeah, Pope Gregory designated or classified the sins. There was some Greek and Roman antecedents to it philosophically. He adapted it, then Thomas Aquinas really promoted the idea of
gotcha, okay.
These are the actions that lead to other bad actions.
Gotcha. Yeah, I just knew it wasn't from the Bible, so I was wondering. Okay, cool. Well, next week we're watching Seance on a Wet Afternoon.
Oh, this is good too.
And by next week, I mean like several weeks from now when we're recording, because we are banking them, and I'm about to go on vacation.
And look at some whales.
And look at some whales.
Or maybe Gojira.
Well, I won't tell you if I see Gojira because he's going to kill me. No. It won't be his fault. He won't do it on purpose. But he's very big and I'm very small in that context. So that's what we're going to watch next, Seance on a Wet Afternoon. I don't know where it's available. I will put it in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
Until then, do you have anything you want to recommend?
Let's see, last
we
episode,
recorded 2 days ago.
I recommended Japanese films. So find a good French thriller.
There you go.
There's some good ones.
This one's good.
Yeah.
Maybe watch The Talented Mr. Ripley. I kind of want to watch it again. I haven't seen it since 1999.
Yeah, there's a very different, the author, Patricia Highsmith, was a out gay woman, but she was outed by her partner.
That's rude.
The Anthony Minghella, the director of The Talented Mr. Ripley, wanted to honor that by making Ripley a more explicitly gay
explicitly
character.
Explicitly homosexual, right.
And so there's a huge difference in how that's taken, because Matt Damon's playing a closeted gay man who then comes out, whereas this Ripley doesn't
loves himself and nobody
have any
else.
Feelings. The Ripley in the book is neither, and Highsmith
like an asexual. That makes
that
sense, because if you're a psychopath at a certain level,
right?
You're gonna. It's just gonna be asexuality.
And it's interesting. His character in the book is one that can't relate to sex or really people at all. They're just sort of pawns to be
moved
around.
They're just pieces of meat. I'm not interested in. Yeah.
But what can you get me? That's kind of his interest in other people. But yes, it might be good to find a French thriller. There's a lot of really good ones. There's a Diabolique.
Oh, Les Diaboliques, yeah.
From 1955.
Which I usually see as just Diabolique.
Right.
Right? That's the same one?
Yes.
Okay.
Elevator to the Scaffold is another film that's directed by Louis Malle.
You said Elevator to the Scaffold?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The same list encourages you to watch Purple Noon.
Fair enough.
Z is actually a very good film.
Z-E-E? Or
just
the letter
Z.
Z? Okay.
There's a whole... all sorts of... Friend Like Harry is one that I was just like, oh my god, that film is terrifying.
Don't give so much homework.
Okay. So what would you like to recommend?
I'm going to recommend, based on your indication that you enjoy the detail thing, the show White Collar.
Okay.
Which I thought was the show Suits, which sounded like the most boring thing ever, so I didn't watch either of them, and I still haven't watched Suits. Even though there's a princess in it, or whatever she is, Duchess, I don't know what she is. Anyways, White Collar is not that. White Collar is a heist an episode, basically. It revolves around an art forger who is at the whim of the FBI because he did get caught. And so now he participates in their stings and things. Mm. So, but it is heist and forgery. So there's a lot of that, like, detail work in there. And then also, like I said, every episode, a heist. So it's really fun. It stars Matt Bomer, who is also one of the most beautiful men. He is, yeah. And he is gay, like, in real life. I'm not outing him. He's an out gay man. And it's got Tiffany Amberstiesen, if you haven't seen her since Saved
Well, I
by the
have not
Bell.
seen her in a long time.
She plays the FBI agent's wife, and she's like a fairly regular character. But I really like that show. I binged all of it when we were living, like, probably like 6 years ago. Went through a depressive period where I just watched like Netflix for 6 hours a day. Like, if I wasn't actively working, I was just in bed watching stuff on my computer. It wasn't great, but I watched all of that, and I think all of Criminal Minds at about the same time. Yeah, it was. I watched a lot of stuff over a very short period of time, but I kind of think I want to rewatch those. Maybe I'll force you to watch one and see if you like it. And I don't know what it's on. It's streaming free on something. I will put it in the show notes. All right, I think that brings us to the end. I think we've been babbling here at the end long enough. If you have questions or comments, concerns, tell me if you like White Collar. Tell us what your favorite French thriller is, since we couldn't seem to narrow it down. You can email us at latecomerspod@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook under the same title. Until next week, whenever that might be for you and for us, I want to remind you to please take your medicine. And we'd like to remind you, better
Better
late
late
than
than
never.
never.